Well, Art Bell was in Hong Kong this past week. He should make it back in time for his shows. We think he'll be all set for Saturday and Sunday. I was going to stand by on Sunday, Ian on Saturday, but I think Art will be there. Now, we'll be back in a moment. Open lines continue on Coast to Coast AM. Yeah, I didn't have a chance to talk with you during the show this week about the fine time I had in near San Francisco, San Jose, of course, Santa Clara, as we did the Bay Area UFO Expo. Wonderful conference that Virginia put on with some great speakers and a lot of people that you've known on Coast to Coast. Danian Brinkley, Sean David Morton was there. Just a great, great opportunity. And, you know, we really met some great people, dedicated people who listen to Coast on a regular basis. And, you know, Vicky, who had severe liver problems, thanks all of you, by the way. You know, we did a little prayer for her about a year or so ago. And, you know, she has a transplant, a new liver, given to her by a 22-year-old who died. And the family just passed that on. And she's doing very well, remarkably well. And thanks to you, by the way, for your prayers and support. And I think she was telling Tom and I that this thing cost $500,000 for this whole procedure. And I was trying to make her laugh. I said, Vicky, the liver cost $48, and the physician fee was the rest. But you know what? That's pretty darn close. Let's go to the phones. We'll pick it up by going west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
How you doing this evening?
Good,
George?
Good.
George, I was listening to the two desperate women that were calling that are under demonic attack.
I know your voice. It's Suleiman.
Yeah, that's right.
I got you down. How are you?
All right. I'm doing well, and you're doing well.
Yeah, things are fine.
Okay, I could pass some information on to you and to them. I believe that they're both listening if they can get a pen and paper. First, they need to contact a Catholic church in the area and ask where there is a store that sells religious items.
Okay.
When they go to the store, there's a blue booklet called the Pieta, P-I-E-T-A. It's 68 pages. It's filled with about 57 major prayers.
And they'll find that in most religious bookstores?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. The next thing that they need to purchase for each of the individuals is the brown scapular. There's a very scapular. It's called the Mount Carmel scapular.
Mm-hmm. I used to have one of those in my youthful days.
Okay, all right. They are very, very powerful. Also, purchase rosary beads and the directions to say them and a cross, and then go to the Catholic Church and have a Catholic priest bless each one of those items.
And they will do that for you.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, without any cost. You see, the reason why they're under attack and the attacks are becoming more dramatic is that each one of them have created this aura of fear around them, and that's what these demons feed on. What these prayers do, for instance, in the book, they will do the prayer that is referred to, the prayer to Saint Michael. It's the most powerful exorcism prayer within the Catholic Church, and that's on page 57. Then on page 46, they do the invocations in honor of the holy wounds of the Sacred Heart of Jesus Christ. And this is a suggestion that really, really works, because I know that I've used it with myself, and it stops these demons from attacking you altogether. If they can make a recording, just saying the name Jesus Christ, the Blessed Virgin Mary, those two names enunciated just by saying simply Jesus Christ and the Blessed Virgin Mary, they send out a resonating force so strong and powerful that demons must run from them. And this was given to St. John's brother when he was alive during the when the Sacred Heart of Jesus Christ walked on the earth. And the three items that all demons are fearful of is the name of Jesus Christ, the name of the Blessed Virgin Mary, and the rosary.
Will this happen right away once they do this? Okay.
Yeah, what, and tell them also, I know they're listening, to cover themselves when they pray. They think of a golden shaft of light coming from God himself, because that's his color, covering the entire body, and then a rainbow covering them. The rainbow is the most powerful protection against all demonic forces. And when these individuals feel that they're attacked, they must say aloud the name of Jesus Christ, and I guarantee you the demon will run.
Okay, we'll give that a try. I hope they heard this. If not, we can get a hold of them.
Okay, and listen, God bless you. You keep up the good work.
All right, thanks, Suleiman. And Suleiman, the psychic, who requires no fee, by the way. And I like that with him. Let's go to our weird hotline. You're on Coast to Coast. Do you have a weird story?
Oh, yes. Is this George?
Yes, it is.
Hi, yeah. I had a weird story that happened years ago,
okay.
And I've never been able to get it out of my mind.
Well, here it goes. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from the D.C. area.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, this happened to me in Florida. I flew back from Vegas, got back to Florida, and met a group of people that I went out with once in a while at a restaurant, like a Spanish-type restaurant. And I saw their cars in the parking lot, so I knew that they were there already. Walked into the restaurant, looked everywhere for them. I mean, circled around, you know, a few times, probably like 3-4 times, and couldn't find them anywhere. So I walked back outside, make sure that those were their cars. Yep, sure thing. Walked back in and walked by tables where they had previously walked by. And there they were all sitting, like six of them, and they were already halfway through the meal. The table was completely empty, nobody sitting there, and suddenly they were just there. And then, but before, as I was approaching the table, there was one lady who was seated there. And when I was approaching the table, she looked like somebody else who wasn't even there because she was out of town, and they're like 30 years apart in age. And when I got up to the table, it suddenly became the woman from England.
That's weird.
Yes. And, you know, it's the strangest occurrence. Well, I have many strange occurrences like that, but that was very strange.
That is. Thanks.
Yeah, it's like she became the other person.
Just like that.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for sharing that story with us. That's why we have the weird hotline at 818-817-0021. Don't miss on a number, because you'll probably inundate somebody in the wee hours, and we don't want to do that. Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hello,
yeah.
George?
Yes, sir.
All right, yeah. I call and have something weird to explain to you.
Okay.
All right. This happened about 5 years ago. I was on September 11th, 2001. I started believing the world could hear my thoughts through the television, stuff like that. Then, but this leads into what I'm getting at. Then about back in December, January, I took a walk, and I was going to go to this girl's house that I loved, my first love.
Sure.
I started walking, and she lived 360 miles away. I had no idea to get there, anything. I just kept walking. I got there in the night with no map, nothing.
Like radar.
What?
You were like radar.
Yeah, like radar. Just kind of hadn't had the way to get there.
How did this happen?
I don't know.
Somebody guided you in.
Yeah, I was hearing voices and stuff like that, too.
What kind of voices?
Just voices in my head.
They say, turn right, go left. What do they say?
Yeah, pretty much. That's what they said. Go right, go left. And I said, no, I'm going this. They said, right. I said, I'll go left.
All right. Well, they got you there. They sure did. Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, Mr. Norris.
Hello to you.
Yes, I have a strange story. I've heard a couple other callers tonight talking about Ouija boards. I have a really strange story about one of those. My only experience with one, I lost some friends over that.
What do you mean you lost friends over it? They didn't die or anything, did they?
No.
You guys just all broke apart or something.
Well, they were convinced that the apartment complex they lived in was haunted. And I was at their house that night, at their apartment, and they started, you know, it sat down at the table. They had candles burning, all the lights out. I was sitting on the sofa drinking a cold one, just, you know, kicking back. I wasn't involved in any way, shape, or form. And then all of a sudden, this paralysis came over me. I couldn't move my arms. I couldn't move my legs. I started getting strange burning sensation in my eyes.
Did you think you were dying or something?
No, I didn't know what was going on. And then all of a sudden, everyone at the other end of the room started staring at me. And then I managed to turn my head around, and everybody started screaming and yelling. And the next thing you know, the front door just flew open with a big kaboom. And it was like, you know, and everybody ran outside. There was nobody outside the door, you know, and they, you know. And it was just the weirdest thing that's ever happened to me. And that's the only experience I've ever had with one. Don't want to have one with another one.
No. You know you don't. Hey, thanks. Appreciate that. Next up, let's go to our weird hotline. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air. Hi. Hello. Gotta go. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, this is Yoli from Woodland Hills, California.
Well, hi, Chipper One. How are you?
Fine, thank you. I'm finally got through to you. I'm so happy. I got a weird story to tell you about a Ouija board.
Okay.
Okay, my friend and I used to play with the Ouija board, and we invited a young man to come along and help us do it. Well, the board was really gibberish, and we couldn't understand what it was saying. So finally, something got on the board, and he said it was Raymond, and that he was a guide. Well, we kind of didn't believe Raymond and what he was seeing. So we said, tell us something about one of us three that none of us know about each other. So he started telling us things about my girlfriend, which I was really surprised because she never told me this, and I knew her for 5 years. It turned out that her father and her mother had a problem concerning her brother. And the father and mother didn't sleep in the same room. I mean, I used to visit my girlfriend all the time, and I didn't know this. And all this was coming out true, and she kept saying, yes, it's true. Later on, we found out that when Raymond's a guide, he helps people cross over that have died. And through him, we met a master called Rick. Now, one time, my friend and I, the male friend, were having an argument. And Rick came on the board and demanded that I, well, not demanded, but a request that I speak to him. And I refused because I knew he was going to scold me. So what happened was Rick relayed a message to my friend to tell me to behave, that my behavior was childish and to be considerate and nice to my friend that was there with us. And Rick was really a nice entity, but he was a master and kind of scared me a little bit. But Raymond was always really nice and reserved, and he always gave us advice. He explained to us that on the other side, there's different levels. Within that level, there are other levels. There's a total of 12 of them, and in each level, there's a total of 7 of them. So you have to get into a purity of a soul to cross these levels.
That's interesting. Now, whatever happened to these two entities?
Okay. What happened was my mother's house burned down. I was living with my mom, and I lost my board. So I've gotten other boards, but yet my girlfriend moved out of state, so she can't help me do it anymore. And my other friend's been having medical problems, so I haven't been able to get on the board. But I had about 30 or 40 tapes, because we used to tape all this. And we were helping entities that would come on the board that were having problems, and we would explain to them that they have died, and they're on the other side. There was a little boy one time that was looking for his mother, and we had to explain to him, your mother's gone, she's up there. But you have to cross over. So follow the angel. The angel will lead you for a nice place. Another time it was a young man that died in a car accident, and we had to go through the whole thing and explain to him, you need to cross over to reach the other side. Follow your guide. That's what Raymond is there for.
How many of them did you help?
We helped quite a few. Like I said, we had about 30 to 50 tapes that we did. We did as much as we could at all different hours of the day and night. We were really wanted to help these souls that were lost. One time we were communicating on the board, and Raymond says, I have to leave. I go, why? He goes, an airplane came down, and we have to go help.
Oh, my. That's an incredible story.
I can't believe this. On Friday the 13th, Hello?
Yeah.
On Friday the 13th, we were playing sports.
You're breaking up on me. Hey, do you know who you sound like?
Uh-uh.
Wayne Newton.
Oh, sorry.
You do. Wayne Newton singing that Donkashane song. That's how he sounded, just like you. You're breaking up a little bit. We got to move on. Let's go next to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
Is it me?
It is.
Okay. My name's Emily. I'm calling from Portland, Oregon.
Hi.
And I wanted to tell a story about a time when I lived in New Orleans. I was pretty much just renting this apartment, and it was an old house that had been broken down into apartments, about 9 different apartments. And my apartment was based, like, on the very low floor, and I had to go through, like, a gated, like, a wooden gate
sure.
to get to the back patio. And I just came home, and I was just doing my normal thing, and my roommate came home, and it was in the evening, and when he came home, we just did our regular routine, and then all of a sudden we heard this, like, really loud noise that came right out. It sounded like it was happened right on our porch, like, up on the awning, and it sounded like a mix between, I can't really describe it really well. I haven't really ever heard anything quite like it, but the best way to describe it is it sounded like somebody taking, like, something sharp to metal and mixing it with, like, a loud child screaming and an electrical explosion all at once.
Jeez.
Just really loud, like, right at our porch. And, like, we were just shocked. And we, like, after a minute or so, we got up enough guts to kind of sneak to the door. And my roommate opened the door, and I was behind him. And he just slammed the door really fast and, like, ran into, and it was a studio apartment. So he just ran into the, like, living room area and just catapulted into, like, this fetal position on the couch going, like, muffling. And, like, I've never really seen him.
What did he say?
He didn't really, he was just mumbling. And he's just like, oh, my God, like, things. Like, I just saw a Cthulhu or something. But he was just, like, mumbling to himself. And, like, after a few minutes, like, he calmed down a bit. And he never really described anything that he actually saw anything, but more of a feeling. And we went outside, or we after a few minutes, we, like, kind of opened the door again and decided to, like, investigate. And then we, like, went outside and we're like, it sounded like something exploded. And so we, like, went to our neighbors and we went to our upstairs neighbors and the one that lived across from us. And so we asked about 3 different people if they heard anything or if they were, like, okay, make sure that, you know, nothing exploded and there wasn't, like, any fire or anything. And everybody looked at us like we were crazy. And they're like, we didn't hear anything. What are you talking about? And so we were like, okay. As we were, like, walking back into the house, we heard the noise again. But it was, like, sounded like it was about 2 houses away and, like, higher. And then about, like, we stayed outside for a few minutes. And about 5 minutes later, we heard it again. But it sounded like it was coming from about a half a block away.
What, like, do you think it was?
I have no idea.
But now, I know you said you were from Portland, but you yeah. sound like you're from Canada. Where are you?
No.
Okay, yeah, you've got a little tiny twang there that when you said about earlier. But we got to move on. We're hitting the break already. This half hour has just zoomed by. Pretty soon you'll be dreaming, but not yet. Because there's more to come on Coast to Coast AM. Well, some results are in on those calcification tests that I've been taking. So here they are, a little drum beat. No, we don't have the little roll, but they say normally that your calcification will increase maybe 20% a year. So it's been 8 months, and instead of increasing, it did decrease by 6%. I wish it would have decreased by more. I was looking for 30 to 40% of calcification in your system. Now, the calcification test in the carotid arteries in the arteries in your neck leading up to your brain, those went down dramatically. So I'm pretty happy with that. But the overall calcification scores from before and now dropped about 6%, which means I'm going to do this program of EDTA, this chemical that's supposed to rid your body of calcification. I'm going to try it for another 4 months and see if those numbers come down again. You know, rather than be up 20%, I guess I should be jumping for joy that I'm down 6%. But, you know, I'm kind of a stickler of numbers, and I want them down even more. So that's the preliminary results of all these tests, and more to come in the next couple months. We'll keep it up. And except I do feel tremendously better since I've been doing this. And I don't know if that's attributed to the program or whether it's some kind of mind placebo that does it to you. But it appears to be working, at least with me. West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi there. How you doing, George?
Good. Well, were you speaking from a speakerphone or something?
Yeah.
Oh, I can barely hear you.
Oh, okay. How about this?
A little closer.
Is that better?
Closer.
Hello.
Okay. Why don't you just pick up the phone?
Because the other part, the headset part,
doesn't... And I'm going to probably lose you, but we'll give you a shot.
Okay, it might be my phone also, because I noticed when I was listening to the show, it's kind of fading in and out.
Okay.
Anyways, quick story. I was down in Arkansas in around 1968, and I was about 17 at the time. I was transferred there from California vis-a-vis my parents moved there. And I was in a place called Fouke, Arkansas, F-O-U-K-E. It's right down the road from where Bill Clinton lived, and I met Bill Clinton when I was down there. We were both kids, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyways, a movie later came out, kind of pretty B-rated movie, around the same time as Chainsaw Massacre, called The Jonesville Monster. But there was this monster down in Boggy Creek, which my grandmother, who lived there, as my dad remarried into this family of Arkansas people. I'm a native Californian, so I'm down there with my sister, and we're living down there in Fouke, Arkansas, 16 miles south of Texarkana, and we're hearing these stories about, my grandmother called him the Mountain Man.
I've heard of this.
Yeah, the movie was out in around, around 70 or something like that.
Right.
Anyways, my sister and I were on the back 10 acres of a 260-acre section, just fooling around as kids would do around that age, and we saw this thing. And I got to tell you, George, I have been afraid of things before, but this thing sent a fear into me like nothing I've ever felt since.
What did you see?
I saw a thing that a lot of people would call it, like I lived in Washington, people call it Bigfoot, people call it, I can't think of the other
Sasquatch. Name. Sasquatch.
Huh?
Sasquatch.
Sasquatch, yeah. Anyways, this particular Sasquatch thing was about, I would say, about 9 feet tall, not as hairy as these other Sasquatches, right? But hairy on almost most of his body, right?
Yeah, I'm with you.
But his face was very, like, deformed. I also knew the kids that starred and the family that starred in that movie, The Jonesville Monster. And my grandmother told us this guy's a mountain man, and the reason that he's out there is because these people, a 17-year-old girl would, like, marry her grandfather, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
And then they would have kids, and then those kids would marry the... There's only like 400 people in a 500-square-mile section of land down there. So there a lot of in-marrying, you know, a lot of marrying like that. But anyways, my sister and I saw this thing, and there was this little creek that ran to the front of the property. And we're probably about 10 acres back from the road, the gravel road.
All right.
And we're living in a trailer home, a 40-foot by 8-foot wide trailer. I was so scared that I froze, just staring at this thing. And it let out like a yelp. I can kind of do a little imitation of it. It goes kind of like this. This thing, when it saw us, I guess it must have scared it too or whatever. But anyways, it went like this. right? And
well, that would scare me too.
Yeah, and but it was like 9 feet tall and pretty stocky.
Pretty good, by the way.
Huh?
That was a pretty good rendition.
I want to tell you, I had a guy put a 45 to my head, and it didn't scare me as much as this thing.
Do you think this is more human than animal?
This was, I would say it was like a throwback kind of a creature, you know?
Kind of in between?
Well, kind of in between a man, all right, a black man, and a Sasquatch. Okay, he had hair on most of his body, kind of like a short-haired dog. You know, not real long, but like, you know, maybe 3/4 of an inch.
You're lucky it didn't attack you.
Well, when we startled it, or when it saw us, and it didn't make that noise, but when it saw us, I think we startled it, and it just stood there with its arms kind of hanging down in a gorilla kind of a, you know, hanging like that. And my sister and I mean, I saw it, and it just froze me. I couldn't move. I was standing in position, and it was like I couldn't move.
Does this creature still exist down there?
Well, they see, I don't know when the movie came out, but according to my grandmother, who at the time, she was like 93, this thing had been down there since she was a little girl.
But it can't live forever.
I don't know. You know, she was 93, and she said they just called it the Mountain Man.
Yeah. No, I've heard that before. And you can do a Google search, and it shows up. I mean, it's there, and it looks a lot like you described it. Half human, half creature. Let's move on to our weird hotline. Thanks for that call. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, George. It's Deb speaking from Vancouver.
You're not going to scream like a Bigfoot either, are you?
No, I'm not. I hope you can understand my accent. That's the only problem.
I sure can.
Something happened to me many years ago that even now I had trouble explaining to myself or finding a reason.
Is that an Australian accent, by the way?
Actually, I'm a New Zealander.
That's close.
It is. What happened is I was nursing way back then still, and I was just finishing a shift, and I'd gone down to the local Catholic church, St. Mary of the Angels, which is one that I used to go to. And I remember seeing a little guy at the bottom of the steps, and because I was a nurse, I sort of felt I should help him. And he had obviously had a stroke, and he had a tripod in one hand, and, you know, he was standing in front of all these steps, like two flights. So I thought, oh, my God, okay, I'll help him up. So he wasn't able to talk or anything. He had a lovely smile, and he was, yeah, just the sort of, I even can think and remember his face now. Anyway, I helped this gentleman to the top of the stairs, and it's a large church. So we walked up right through into the front doors, and I opened the door for him so he could go into the church, and something caught my eye on the notice board just outside the, just going into the church. So I held the door open for him, and he went through into the church. Anyway, I read the notice and thought, okay, I'll go in and light a few candles because I love doing that. And went back in over to thinking, oh, well, I wonder if, I hope he's okay, you know, sitting down somewhere. George, I couldn't find this guy. This little gentleman was not in the church.
Where'd he go?
I have absolutely no idea, and to this day, I cannot explain it. I have absolutely no idea. I searched the church, actually. I thought, oh, my God, what's happened? Where's this guy? There was only one entrance to the church, and I know I helped him because I physically helped him. And yet, you know, I've been a police officer and everything, and to this day, it's one of those experiences in my life I cannot explain.
And he just disappeared?
He just disappeared. He wasn't there. There were no other entrances to the church. And given the fact that I'd had to help him up two flights, I just cannot explain it, George. Any ideas from anybody, I would...
You know, could he have gone into another dimension?
You know, George, I'm a practical person, you know, and it's one of the mysteries of my life.
And would you? You just turned your head and he was gone?
No, I helped him in through the doors, two large doors. I had to open the door for him so he could go into the church. It was 5 o'clock, so it was quite, you know, the church was not wonderfully lit. It was an evening service, a mass was going to happen, you know, few people in church, you know, I held the door open for him, read the notice board and went back in, and he was gone.
I mean, how much time elapsed?
3 or 4 minutes, and that would have only been enough time for a gentleman with a severe hemiparesis like he had.
Could he have been hiding in a confessional booth or something?
No, George, he wouldn't have moved quick enough.
Hey, 3 minutes.
10 minutes to get him up the steps.
Oh, all right. Like you say, he wasn't walking too fast.
Yeah, though. I'm sorry. Any ideas from people, I'd be quite keen to.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, we'll listen in and see if anybody has anything. That is another one of our weird stories. Let's go next to our first-time caller line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hello, George. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. This is Heather in Ohio, and I have an interesting story for you tonight. My son is, he's 22 months old, and he's a wonderful little guy, he has a great personality, very cuddly, very smart. And we were laying in bed, I think this was on Tuesday or Wednesday of this week, and watching TV, and he grabbed my hand, and he started kind of just touching my fingers and touching my hand and touching my fingers and so on. And then he used my hand to sign, to make letters of the alphabet using sign language.
Okay.
And, you know, I wasn't scared. I mean, I can't be scared of my son. And he spelled out B-W-E-L and then made the okay sign with my hands. Now, he's 22 months old, and the only person in my family that really knew sign language, I know a little bit of the alphabet, was my father. He was a police officer, and he had to learn it for his job. And I really don't know how to explain it. I've been trying to, I guess, understand or find out what exactly happened, and I just have no clue.
What are these letters that he spelled out? Did that mean anything to you?
You know, there was more that he did that I couldn't understand, but I did get the B-W-E-L and then the okay sign. You know, my father's initials were WB. You know, I tried to wrap my mind around it. My mom thought he was saying, you know, that my father was speaking through my son to, you know, be well, to, you know.
Did your father die before your son was born?
No, I'm sorry.
You there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry.
You all right?
It's kind of a touchy subject for me still. They got to spend 3 months together before my father passed away. And they were just two peas in a pod. I mean, before babies could smile, my son smiled at my father, and he just wanted to be around him all the time. And even to this day, he knows who my father is. He can pick him out of a picture, and he calls him Pawpaw. And My father was cremated, and his ashes are at my mother's house. And the first thing that my son does is go over to my father's urn and talk to it.
Was your son doing these things then while your father was still alive? Or did this all happen afterward?
It happened afterward. I mean, my son was only 3 months old.
Yeah, it's very possible he's communicating through your son. That's very possible. Which is pretty remarkable.
I would say, because I don't know what else to think. I've thought about, you know, taking him to a psychic or getting him tested for something, but I really don't know.
Is he still doing this? Or has it stopped?
Well, again, it happened this week on a Tuesday or Wednesday, and we really haven't, you know, been in the same situation where he would do it again. He's either, you know, tired or groggy. But he will. You know, before he could talk, he would go over to my mother's house, and she would rock him in her rocking chair, and he would look up and smile, just at the ceiling and smile, and just jibber-jabber like he was talking to somebody. And, you know, it's my mother's house is a very fascinating place. A lot of weird things go on there. There is a handprint on my mother's wall from my father, and it's still there. This happened, you know, over, you know, well, almost 2 years ago.
She's not going to paint over the old handprint, is she?
Oh, no. She wants, she, my like I said, my dad was a cop, and she wants to talk to some of the guys at the police station to come and lift it because she wants it framed.
That's great. They may do that. Yeah.
My father. I think that would be wonderful.
You know, it's very possible that he's communicating through your little boy.
That would be definitely neat. I'm glad that someone like my father would watch over my son.
Yeah, absolutely. He turned into his guardian angel.
I hope so. I don't think there's anything better.
Nope.
Than my dad. You know, he was such a great guy. He was so energetic, and he was just a wonderful man. He was an experience. He wasn't a man. He was an experience.
A little magic there, huh?
I was wondering if I could say hi to somebody.
Yeah, sure.
I want to say hi to my husband. He's a trucker, and he's in Texas right now.
Is he listening?
Yes, he said he was going to listen to
Tell him to honk his horn right now.
Mike, honk your horn.
I'm sure he's doing that. Okay, thanks.
Thank you so much, George.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, we get a lot of truckers all around the country. But I really do. It's very possible that your father's communicating through your little boy, and he just wants you to know that he is A-okay. Well, another hour is clipping by. By the way, we've got a great series of guests for you again next week. And you might notice when you go to the coasttocoastam.com website, generally we are going to be leaving one guest's name off on the list, and there's a couple reasons for that. One, sometimes it's a surprise guest, and we just want to hold back for a little bit and kind of let the mystery of that unravel. The other reason is sometimes we don't even have a guest for that day because we want it to be part of our floating format in the event there's some kind of a major story that is worthy of coverage on the way we cover stories. We will pop them in on that day rather than really try to shift guests around and cancel their bookings and things like that. So we try to do this now by keeping one day open and preserve that as long as we can. And then we get that filled up either the night before, sometimes even the morning of. It depends on whether there's a major breaking story. But we've got some great guests. Psychic Dreamwalking. Bill Burns is joining me on Tuesday. We're going to talk a little bit about our book, Worker in the Light, and also Philip Corso, the day after Roswell that day on Tuesday. Wednesday, we're keeping that open for who knows what. And then Thursday, two major guests as we talk about the Bigfoot and Sasquatch. And then back to open lines on Friday with Linda Moulton Howe, the first hour. I'll be live out of the OnStar studios in Detroit for the rest of open lines. How quickly? Already talking about the end of the week. We haven't even gotten out of this one yet. We'll be back another hour to go of open lines. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.